Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of March 5th, 2015. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Good. How are you doing?
Great. It's great to have you with us as always, D.R. So, D.R., there was an interesting report that came out this week, and it has to do with the link between climate change and the conflict in Syria, driven, of course, by ISIS, which is now a household word. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about that tonight. We want to talk about that because there's two sort of big ideas that I think float around in this that are good for climate hawks to be aware of. The first is this is a concept of distal versus proximate causes, or another way of saying is ultimate versus proximate causes. And this is the idea that there can be some background reason that sets the stage for something else to happen that is a real, true underlying cause. And I'll go back to one of my favorite examples. There's a book called Guns, Germs, and Steel by Jared Diamond. And he starts off the book by saying, by basically looking at the Spanish conquest of the Americas and pointing out that the distal cause, the ultimate cause of success of the Spanish, was that they had the guns, they had the horses, they had the germs behind them, they had the steel, right? Mm-hmm. So the details of any given battle are almost a foregone conclusion because the Spanish had all this. And the real question is, how come the Spanish had the guns, germs, and steels and not the Aztecs?
Mm-hmm.
The other interesting subtext here is the idea of an embodiment, right? When you think of a car, you have some mental image of an automobile, right? But when you go buy a Prius, that is a specific embodiment of a car that takes all the principles of a car, the engine, the steering wheel, the tires, go from here to there, and puts it into one particular form. And I think that when we talk about this ISIS issue and how climate relates to the Syrian conflict, it's a very specific description of something that's quite abstract, and it allows you to look at the thing in the abstract concept as to how it might really play out in one specific case, right? Mm-hmm. So, DR, let me put you on the spot. Tell me what this report from the National Academy of Sciences told us about the link between climate change and the horrors that are going on with ISIS in Syria.
Well, as Joe Room of Climate Progress pointed out on March the 3rd, this study, as we noted, the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, was the main trigger. It was the main trigger of Syria's brutal civil war, human-caused climate change, was and helped drive the rise of the terrorist Islamic State of Iraq, and it was spawned by what one expert called perhaps the worst long-term drought and most severe set of crop failures since agricultural civilizations began in the Fertile Crescent from 2006 to 2010. It destroyed the livelihood of 800,000 people, according to the UN, and sent vastly more into poverty. And the study entitled Climate Change in the Fertile Crescent and Implications of the Recent Syrian Drought found that global warming made Syria's 2006 to 2010 drought 2 to 3 times more likely. And as retired Navy Rear Admiral David Titley told Slate, he noted, quote, "You can draw a very credible climate connection to this disaster we call ISIS right now." And
so what they're saying is that climate change is consistent with 2 or 3 times more likely to have this horrible drought like the one that went, like, evidently from 2006 to 2010, right? Mm-hmm. An epic shaking drought that happened there, which displaced everybody, and that was sort of the root cause of the unhappiness that led to ISIS?
Exactly. The study goes on to point out that quote, weakening wind patterns that bring rain-laden air from the Mediterranean reduce precipitation during the usual November to April wet season, and in addition, higher temperatures increased moisture evaporation from soils during the unusually hot summers. Joe Rome goes on to state, quote, tragically, this study and others make clear that for large parts of the not terribly stable region around Syria, including Lebanon, Israel, Jordan, and parts of Turkey and Iraq, brutal multi-year droughts are poised to become the norm in the coming decades if we don't reverse carbon pollution trends ASAP. So, when you
and I think in that forgive me, dear, in that article they said, of course, climate change is not the direct cause of ISIS. Right? The mm-hmm. the philosophy that the ISIS people are expounding has been around 1,000 years. It's mm-hmm. just that climate change has made the unfortunately, it's made the soil drier, but has made a more fertile environment for that sort of ideology to flourish, right?
Exactly, and there was a great video by the by Russell Brand was released on March the 5th, where he talks about how in areas that have extreme drought and extreme weather events, when you have a vulnerable population that is vulnerable to starvation, that is vulnerable to economic insecurity, they can be lured by extremists into signing up to an army of extremism in exchange for, you know, having a full stomach, basically. Mm-hmm. That the thing that enables terrorism is essentially an empty stomach. And if you have people who are extreme in their ideology who will say, we will feed you if you subscribe to our ideology, naturally that creates a fertile breeding ground for terrorism and for extremist groups like ISIS. So, you know, for everybody who harps about the importance of national security, this is, as Joe Rowland notes, why we have to cut carbon pollution, and in the name of having a stable world and a stable climate and a stable environment that reduces the risk of people starving and thus joining up with organizations that will feed them in exchange for slaughtering their perceived enemies.
I think that something I read somewhere about climate change, but it was talking about scientists struggling to recognize global warming. This is over mm-hmm. the last 100 years. And one of the quotes that always struck me was, they said that you cannot perceive a pattern until you can believe that a pattern is possible, right? So if you reject outright that there's any connection between climate and these political events, you're never going to see the pattern. But once you say there might be a pattern, all of a sudden these things start to pop up. So we talk about this ISIS thing in Syria as an embodiment, a specific realization of how climate can influence conflict. But when you start to think about it, there's quite a long list of other potential things that could go wrong. And let me just give you a short list. I mean, we all know that in Bangladesh, there's something like 30 million people that live within 1 foot of the sea level. Okay, when sea level rises and those 30 million people have to go someplace, that is an enormous opportunity for conflict, because who can take on 30 million people? What country can do that? There's a question of the glaciers in the Himalayas melting, right? And that's the drinking water for Pakistan and India, right? So when Pakistan and India, who already have enough problems, shall we say, without having a drought, when they start to run out of water, that's going to exacerbate underlying conflicts and make it much more likely that something dreadful could happen. You've got, nowadays, you've got the Arctic melting, right? So now Denmark, Canada, Russia, the United States, and as it happens, China, who's bought property in, I guess, northern Finland or something, they're all border the Arctic Ocean. Right? There's a lot of resources there that people are going to be fighting over. And the worst scenario, I mean, we've just got this drought in California, which plausibly is climate related. They're running out of water, and they look north, you know, 1,000 miles, and you see Canada with the largest store of fresh water in the world. And you know that there could be conflict over that, a political conflict. I mean, just the opportunities for this, for climate to influence future conflicts at a hidden level, at a distal level, is impressive.
And it sort of explains why you have a lot of national security figures trying to get the word out and trying to wake people up to understand what's at stake. There was a report in the Texas Tribune about national security advisors, retired national security advisors, going to state legislatures, including one state legislature in Texas, urging these state legislatures to comply with the EPA Clean Power Plan and explaining in explicit terms what will happen if carbon pollution is not reduced worldwide, that you will have more deployment of military forces, you will have more U.S. involvement in military conflicts, unwinnable military conflicts around the world. And these retired military advisors are begging, pleading with some of these state legislators, some of these elected officials to please comply and to please, you know, step up on this issue and to lead on this issue. You know, there's some indications in the recent stories that their voices are going unheeded, but trust me, in the future, people will be saying, boy, we should have listened to them.
Well, let me give you my story about the scrambled consequences of these kinds of events. So I read a book recently about the history of Moorish Spain. Okay, so this goes from the year 700 to about the year 1100. And in something like the 900s AD, the Moors, of course, the Muslim Islamic Spain, was invaded from North Africa by another set of another strain of Islam. I think they're called the Almohads, who were much more stringent and much more primitive in their interpretation of Islam. I don't know if that rings a bell with Wahhabism today. But anyway, these Almohads invaded the original Moorish that were in Spain and were pretty happy in order to impose a stricter Islam. What happened was that the Christian kingdoms in France and, you know, the southern part of France would make alliances with different cities in Moorish Spain. And so there was these constantly evolving alliances of Moors and Christians against, you know, the Almohads, and then, you know, everyone getting together against a Moorish city and whatnot. All I can think of is that the same, that climate has made ISIS a big factor. And I heard on the news the other day that there is at least the theoretical possibility that the United States soldiers and Iranian soldiers would march together to attack ISIS, which is just an amazing concept. But I mean, harkens back to sort of these mixed sort of medieval battles where everyone was switching sides every 20 minutes. So I don't know. I just don't know.
And it forces you to think, you know, we hear all this political rhetoric about, you know, fiscal responsibility and fiscal, you know, wisdom. And you think about it, look how much money we're going to be spending, not just cleaning up after extreme weather events, but also getting involved in all these military conflicts spurred by climate change. You think about, you know, when everybody talks about the cost of switching to clean energy, you know, this is why we have to mention the cost of not switching to clean energy.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. I mean, I think that the closer for me in terms of conflict that might arise out of climate is the movie The Day After Tomorrow. Did you see the movie The Day After Tomorrow?
Yes, loved it.
So to recap for those people who missed it, this movie is now, what, 6 or 7 years old? Even longer?
It came out 2004.
2004, oh my God. Anyway, the Day After Tomorrow, something happens and all of the United States freezes over from climate change, right? Mm-hmm. Which on the face of it, you know, you can say, well, that's not the less likely thing to happen. But when I look out my window and I see 3 feet of snow still on the ground, I wonder about that.
But exactly.
Anyway, all of the United States freezes solid. And what happens at the end of the movie is that all of America, all American citizens, immigrate to Mexico and take up residence in Mexico.
Exactly.
And the movie, either tongue-in-cheek or somehow, blithely shows a happy situation where 200 million Americans move into Mexico City and the Mexicans are happy and everyone's getting along. And it's either incredible satire that I missed even at the time, but the idea that these populations would get along without any conflict is pretty silly, I think.
Yeah, exactly. There are going to be so many resource wars and so many wars for, you know, fertile ground that, you know, it's frightening to think of it, you know, truth will be definitely stranger than fiction. And, you know, we have a chance to avoid this. We have a chance to turn away. We have a chance to turn things around. But are we going to be smart enough to take that chance? Or are we going to be dumb enough to walk right into a bleak future?
Boy, I think we're smart enough, and the people listening to this podcast are smart enough. We're going to do the right thing. So, DR, I want to tell everybody that we do the MCAN conference is coming up. The MCAN conference, in collaboration with the Toxic Action Center, will be held on March 15th, Sunday, March 15th, at Northeastern University. It's a great opportunity to meet other climate hawks, to learn no matter what your skill level. The keynote speaker will be Jackie Patterson, who is the leader of the NAACP's Climate Justice Initiative. So that's going to be a great presentation. You should come if you're at all in the Boston area. You can get to Northeastern on the Orange Line, the Green Line, and the commuter rail. I mean, there's a lot of ways to get there. So please try to make it. If you want to check out the links to some of the stuff we talked about in this show, they'll be on our blog at massclimateaction.wordpress.com. You can find us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/massclimateaction. You can listen to the show on Stitcher. You can find us on iTunes. We're all over the place. You can even follow us on Twitter. We tweet at massclimate, and DR tweets at DR Tucker. He's a great guy to follow. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. Thank you very much for being here, DR.
Thanks.
And thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you all again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.